You are listening to the Street Cred Podcast, the show laser focused on helping streetwear brands turn their audience into a community. I'm Elijah Delport, and today this is a Street Cred special. You know, we've been doing a daily podcast for some time now, but every now and then I like to talk to some people who are really making it happen, part of the industry. And today I'm joined by Jamar Scarvelis. He is the founder of Format Attire. That's got nearly 12,000 followers on Instagram. He also has a marketing agency specializing in ads, and he's a six-figure entrepreneur. Jamar, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Elijah. It's very good to be here. I'm excited to get into this one today.
Yeah, and look, I think this is a great opportunity. I mean, this is really our first time that we've spoken outside of direct messages, so I think this is going to be a great learning experience for not only me, but also the listeners as well. So if you could start, I'd love to learn about you, Jamar, the context behind you. What are you doing now? What led up to this point? And then we'll see where the conversation goes from there.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, it's definitely good to meet you here today. I've definitely seen your face around, so it's good to, I guess, have a chat with you. But I guess to introduce myself, I run a clothing brand called Format Clothing Attire. And like you said, run a marketing agency as well. Have been running the clothing brand for just over 2 years now, and started the marketing agency probably around a year and a few months ago. So basically just running those two full time at the moment. Just trying to put as much time and effort into the two to help them grow. It's, I guess, very fulfilling, and I'm enjoying every minute of it, really.
Yeah, and if I'm not wrong, you're in Bali right now. Born and bred in Australia, right? And then now in Bali, you just like living the dream there, like, you know, spending a bit of some of that extra cash on a nice holiday, or like what's that look like at the moment?
So landed over here around 13 days ago, I believe. Basically, it's, I guess, been a long time coming. And I'm spending the rest of the year over here with one of my mates. So we're both just working online, basically. We're in Ubud at the moment. We're going to Thailand in a couple of months.
Yeah, great.
Just sort of, I guess, taking in the scenery. It's the first time I've been overseas, really. So it's quite good.
That's
the weather's
awesome.
Very nice over here. So definitely different. Yeah. It was good to get away from the cold weather. But yeah, we're just working every day, really, in Bali over here now.
Yeah. So what brought you to the point where you started Format Clothing Attire? Like what led up to that? Like did the clothing brand, just for context, come before the marketing agency, or was it the other way around?
Yeah, it sure did. So coming out of school, my clear intent was to go to uni. I got into a double degree. Started that, and after 6 months of uni, I sort of, I guess, made a decision that this wasn't really for me, and I was going to try something else. It came to my mind that uni was always going to be there and something I could fall back on if I ever needed. It wasn't really a better time to start my own business than right then and there. So that's really where I guess, got into e-commerce and started my own clothing brand. Fashion was something that I had always sort of been interested in, and I guess thought if I was able to make that my career, then there's nothing really else I would want to do. So after 6 months of uni, I really just said, fuck it, I'm going all in, really. So I was working for my dad concreting at the time as well. So he runs a concreting business, so I was at uni and working for him. So I guess I just continued working a job, and then launched the clothing brand. And then, yeah, it was just, I guess, made my way to where I am today.
So you're working with your dad concreting, and then you did 6 months of uni as well. And then you decided to essentially drop all of that to go all in for a clothing brand that wasn't exactly sure even work. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I guess as silly as it sounds, I just sort of deferred from uni and took some time off, knowing that, I guess, that opportunity was always going to be there. Just sort of, I guess, tried my luck with the clothing brand. yeah, it was a, it was kind of a, I guess, a big leap and a scary experience, but I'm very glad I did it. And no regrets, really.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's funny because your story sounds similar to a lot of stories of brand owners in the space and just business owners in general, actually quite similar to mine. Like there's some, still some differences, but I mean, I don't think many people know this, but I, you know, I never went to university, and like that, you know, your final years of school, that's all anyone ever talks about. I mean, as and in Australia anyway, I'm sure you would have felt that experience. Yeah. It probably depends which school you go to a little bit, but it's just like, oh, what are you studying at university? I'm not.
Yeah.
That's like, it's a bit of an awkward conversation. And then it's like all the questions after school. It's like, oh, how's that business going? And it's like, really, the pressure's on. And it, I find, I've always found that, I don't know if you found the same, Jamar, but I've always found it a struggle to really know who are my people on my side, who are the ones that really care about what I'm doing, and who are the others that maybe they're just asking the questions to be polite, or maybe they think in the back of their mind it's just a matter of time before he's back there in a day job and or back at university. And like that's a tough balance, having those conversations and realizing you don't really believe in what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's funny you touch on that, actually, because I would say that's probably one of the most beneficial things I found when I jumped into running a business. Is after probably 6 or 12 months, I was really able to figure out who, I guess, within my friend group was actually my friend and actually invested in, me benefiting my life, right? I guess everyone can sort of seem like they want the best for you, but not everyone actually does. So I guess, throughout my experience running a business, that's definitely one of the beneficial things, is I've really been able to tell and experience who actually wants the best for me and who's actually interested in, I guess, helping me and my business grow. It's quite funny you speak on that. And I guess additionally, to touch on what you first mentioned about the sort of pressure of going to uni or what you're going to do after school, I can definitely relate to that. I went to a private school when it was really two options, right? It was either you go to uni or you go to a trade, an apprenticeship. Yeah. And I guess, I was probably 70 or 80% of the people that I went to school with went to uni, and I was one of those. So it was, I guess, a little bit out of the norm to try and start my own business. I guess I'm very glad that I did it.
I mean, it's a tough balance, I think, a tough dynamic. And like one that I think, like, for me, I always knew that if I went to uni, like that was worst case scenario. If I have to get a job, that means I've failed. That's what it was like for me in my mind. And like, so I don't even think I could come to terms with the whole idea of me having to work under some, like, not even to suggest it's a bad thing, because it's great. And like, I'm sure you'd learn so much, and some people probably need, and not everyone's built for making businesses, but man, I just know, like, I'm not one of those people.
Believe it or not, I was very glad that I went to uni, actually. I think
coming
out of school, I was very sort of, I guess, blindsided to the opportunities, right? Like I mentioned, it was really just a push for either uni or an apprenticeship. And I guess I wasn't really open to the idea. I've never really considered starting my own business, or I guess the opportunity that there is starting an online business. I was definitely not aware of that. And I think really coming out of uni, coming out of school, and I think that around that time, that was when really social media and TikTok started to become a real popular thing.
What year was this?
It would have been 2020, I believe.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. I guess I really was, I guess, opened up to the opportunities that are available online during those 6 months that I was at uni, and then I guess sort of just believed in myself and took the jump, really.
Yeah. So when you made the jump, was it something? Was your brand, so you had already started your brand in uni, while at uni, is that correct?
No, it's not. So I basically I guess just did uni, and then it was the semester break, and I just decided that I was going to have the next 6 months off of the back end of the year, try and, I guess, create my own business. It's funny that you mentioned that. Do you, I guess I can assume you know who Andrew Tate is. He's got like a educational program, I guess it was called Hustlers University.
Yeah, I heard of it.
I ended up paying to join that. And I guess there's multiple different business models that you can learn within it. And e-commerce was one of them. And I guess that was really something that caught my mind. So I guess I had the idea of quitting uni and trying to do something that I guess was taught within the program. And I landed on e-commerce. And then, yeah, I guess, like I said before, I had an interest in fashion as well. So sort of paired up the two and then launched the brand probably maybe 1 or 2 months after quitting uni. Oh, actually, that's probably a lie. I probably launched the brand maybe 4 or 5 months after, because as I'm sure you're aware, it's a lot of stuff that goes on in the back
end.
Get to the point where you have the products available.
It's a bit of time from like the idea conception to ready to go to market.
100%. It's a very long process, but yeah, I guess you learn a lot along the way, really.
Yeah, were you working at the same time as doing your brand?
Yeah, I was. So for the first probably even over 12 months, I wasn't really too profitable, right? You just reinvest the profits if you even do make some. For the first probably 6 months, I wasn't making too much money. I believe my first drop went very well, or decently well. I sold out most of my products. I was very fortunate. I had a decent, I guess, size friend group that all supported me.
Yeah. And
I was very fortunate that I had a lot of people that I know in real life buy my products. I guess that wasn't too much of the case for the second, third, fourth, fifth drop after that, which tends to be a factor that happens for a lot of brands when they
launch. This is such a trend. Yeah. No, exactly what you're saying happens to so many people. Oh my goodness. And it's like, it's the effect where the first drop is just amazing, exactly as you explain it, because you got all your friends and family that come in and buy, and then drop two, drop three, drop four, you know, it's not so good. And like, I think what's really interesting about that is that most brands that we see come in, they will quit after drop one or two. Like, they won't be back. And that's amazing to me, because it's like, you really just, you experience the high of drop one, you experience the low of drop two, and at the point that you actually would have started getting your real customers and started growing something real that's not, that goes beyond your friends and family, that's when you quit. Like, that's when you just turn down that opportunity. But I suppose they don't, like, you know, in the mind of, like, when you don't see the future and it's all unknown, I suppose, what else do you think? But, well, that was just a fluke and it's not going to be like that again.
Yeah, I think it comes down to a few factors. I think the financial side of thing is definitely, there's something that I guess is the reason a lot of brands stop. Like, you have to invest a decent amount of money into inventory, true, right? And if you're not selling those products after two or three drops and you're sitting on products, like, it can sometimes be a sort of scary thing to, I guess, try and hope that future drop is going to be the one that saves you. So I guess that's something that probably holds a lot of people back. But I guess it probably also comes down to the mindset, right? I think a lot of people, especially in this generation, are looking for, I guess, maybe quick money, or I guess a quick rise to fame. I always went into it knowing that it wasn't going to happen overnight. And if I was able to run my brand for 10 years, it's very likely I was going to have success with it, right? I went into it with a sort of long-term point of view. I'm definitely not where I want to be at the moment. There's a lot of, I guess, improvements I'm planning on making in the future. But yeah, I think, I guess, 100%, you just have to look at any type of business, right, on the long-term scale, and having a few setbacks is always going to happen. And I think being an entrepreneur and running your own business, you're really just there to solve problems, right? And
I guess true.
Having problems
that is business in a nutshell, problem solving.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess having inventory that isn't selling is a major problem, right? And it's your job to be able to solve that issue and get past it and move on from it. And that's probably the thing that stops most brands.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's really just important that you have a long-term mindset, right? And you can't expect every drop to sell out, especially if you've been running a business for 6 months, right? How can you be any good at it after 6 months, right? It takes years to get good at something, especially to become an expert.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just feel like some people have unrealistic expectations, and when they have that failed drop, then they just give up, really.
Yeah, well, I think those unrealistic expectations are brought upon by comparison. I think comparison is the giver of those unrealistic expectations, because what happens when you're scrolling on Instagram, if you're a brand owner, you probably follow other brand owners, or you probably are somewhat in the fashion industry. I would be surprised if you weren't, right? Yep. So you see all these other streetwear brands that have started in the last 2 to 5 years, or maybe a similar time as you, and they're doing better than you, right? It's like, well, why is that? And I mean, I get stuck in that myself, like with my own practice, is that, well, these other companies, they've, you know, this person hasn't even been as long as me, and they're already, you know, they're already doing better. Like, yeah. I deserve that. That's the mindset, right? But it's like, I think it, when one steps back and go, okay, what am I doing this for them, or am I doing this for me? And can I really compare myself to them? Well, no, they're doing something different. And actually, the fact that they're going really well and super successfully, go them. Like, that's great. But, you know, like, sometimes I think that people justify following all these brands as, well, I'm learning from them. Man, I think if it's causing you more harm than good, I'd just unfollow them. I would just unfollow. Like, if you can't not compare yourself to all those people, like, you know, that comparison might be the root of your expectations that are unrealistic, which then might lead to eventually your business demise. You know, I mean, that's not worth it.
Yeah, I think comparison is probably a thing that can, I guess, trouble you when doing anything, right? Especially running a business. It's something I struggled with. Like when I mentioned the few drops that I had that didn't go to plan, you instantly start comparing each other. And I guess social media is like a bit of a highlight reel, right? If a brand sells out, they're going to try and share it.
That's it. Especially, yeah. And you got to remember that. Hey.
Yeah. 100%. Especially, I guess, people are trying to build personal brands nowadays as well, right? So they'll have their clothing brand, and if it sells out, they're going to start promoting that they had a successful drop on their personal brand, and that's really where they're just sharing their success. And if your brand's not doing well and you're watching that content, you just got to compare yourself, and it's just sort of a downhill spiral from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Jamar, you mentioned something before that I thought was really interesting. I mean, I don't want to push you outside of your comfort zone, but I might want to actually a little bit. I know this is a podcast, it's a recorded conversation, but you mentioned where you are now is not where you want to be. So and another thing you said was that there's lots of improvements to come before you get to where you want to be. So I'm really curious, in all honesty, If you were to just keep it a buck, keep it 100, where are you right now, and where do you want to be? What's the vision? And then what are the improvements that you look to make along the way? I just think it would be an interesting discussion.
Right. Yeah. It's I guess there's a lot of different ways I could tackle this question. I guess in terms of where I want to be, right, I think it's just really about creating, I guess, a better business and a more fulfilling business, right? Probably the improvements that I want to make is, I guess, I think probably in terms of my clothing brand, I think my products are probably one of the best, aspects of the brand in terms of the quality, like that. That's probably the one area that I've been able to, I guess, do well. And that's probably the reason why my brand has done what it's done. I think the other, I guess, areas that I definitely need to improve on is probably customer service and fulfillment, and a lot of the back end side of things. Coming into business, there's so many different aspects that, I guess, being like a single founder like myself, you need a master, right? So
you gotta wear many hats.
Yeah, 100%. So I guess probably the main things I need to improve and want to improve is probably hiring out a better team. I have a few, I guess, people that help me, especially with the marketing agency side of things. I've got a few employees, but I guess the next sort of few steps for me really is probably building a better team around me. I guess surrounding myself with like-minded people and other business owners, that's probably the one thing that I want to improve the most, right? Coming from where I come from, just outside of Adelaide, I don't really have any other friends that run a business or like online business. I guess where I want to see myself, I guess it's not really any type of financial position or anything like that. I would just say I just want to, I guess, not only better myself, but actually build, a stronger network around myself where I'm always, I guess, bouncing ideas off other people, and I guess not only benefiting myself, but helping others grow as well.
That's a really good point. I love that you mentioned in all of that, the part that I love the most is that you mentioned the fulfillment aspect, because that's something I've been reflecting on a lot personally recently. And I posted something today and it says, at your funeral, would you rather they say he sold the most t-shirts or he built the strongest community? And for me, this was just a point of reflection on like, what is the point? Why do we do all of this? Like, why do we, you know, like so many people's goal is money. It's the finance thing. And it, you know what, on a surface level, it actually makes sense, right? Because, you know, you go for money, money can buy you comfort. Money can buy you lots of things, right? And that's the real motive for going for this thing. But like, let's go in a layer deeper. Why do we even want to chase money? Well, it's very simple. It's for self-fulfillment, to feel like we have a fulfilling life. My question is, can we not just cut to the chase? You know, like, are there areas that we can cut money out of the equation that we can feel more fulfilled right now without having to make 10K a month, without having to be on like Forbes 30 under 30. It's like, probably, yeah. And actually, if we cut to the chase a bit more, we might actually feel more fulfilled than we would otherwise. So no, I'm really glad you raised that point. And so I have a follow-up question for you, is that what ways, maybe you have some specific stories in the past. I mean, we could talk all day about, you know, how to make more money in your company or whatever, but like, and I'm sure we will get to that. But I'm curious, Jamar, if you have any stories of you and your clothing brand, moments that made you feel really fulfilled and moments that you'd like to experience more of in the future.
Yeah. Definitely, I guess the feedback, right? Feedback is probably not only the one aspect and one area that you're going to be able to make the most improvements from, but additionally, the one area you're going to, I guess, feel extremely fulfilled from. I guess my brand is really about producing high quality products. And when I'm able to, I guess, have other people tell me that they are impressed by the quality or they're very happy with the product, that's really, really fulfilling. Mm. Something that actually motivates me to continue going. Something that I struggled with is, I guess, the amount of inventory I had, right? So when I started running ads, we were getting too many orders to handle, right? We were running out of stock. And then
that's a good problem to have.
I definitely am not complaining, but we ended up doing pre-orders, and that sort of, I guess, definitely hurt the fulfillment side of things. People were waiting very long for their orders, et cetera. It wasn't a great experience, right? And that can definitely not only hurt the sort of reputation, but I think I guess, yeah, the sort of long-term community aspect of the brand. But yeah, probably, I guess, tying back to it, being able to produce a product that people are consistently happy with is extremely fulfilling, and it motivates me and continues to, I guess, push me to keep doing it, really.
What I hear in everything you just said was that fulfilled customers means a fulfilled brand owner.
100%. I think, like, having a good drop and making a lot of money is good, and it hits for like 30 minutes or an hour, right? Especially like running a marketing agency. If I close a good deal on a sales call, I get off that call and I'm jumping around, jumping on my bed. I'm really excited, but it only lasts a short amount of time, right? But if you have people messaging you once a day for the next 15 days after a drop, when they receive their product, saying, "Well, I'm over the moon with this," and leaving reviews on your website and things like that, that's really what I guess lasts a while, and it's extremely fulfilling. I think money's just sort of a short term aspect, but I guess having people's opinion that is strong about you and what you're actually producing really goes a long way.
Yeah, I think I like to think of money as the byproduct of value. I mean, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about value, right? Delivering value, and in return, you get the you receive value. You give value, and you receive value.
Yeah.
Right. 100%. And the idea is that that if you focus on giving lots of value, then, like, I mean, it kind of sounds obvious and dumb, but like, you'll receive lots of value in the, like, financially. Yeah. And I just remember something. The dad of a friend of mine, he's pretty high up in this company. They're in the not in the clothing manufacturing space, but they kind of like with steel manufacturing. They create some goods for government and stuff. And he speaks about one of the questions that he always asks in the final stages of an interview process is this. He says, in every company, there are always three stakeholders: the staff, the customers, and the shareholders, right? They're the three stakeholders in any business, like product, you know, clothing brand, whatever, service, doesn't matter. He said, in which order do you prioritize the three stakeholders? Like, which ones do you put first and which ones do you put last? And I said to him, first the staff, second the customers, and third the stakeholders. And that order of priority, from most important, when to put them first and to least important. Not to say the stakeholders are least important, or the shareholders, sorry. And he said, yes. And the reason why you put it in that order is because value flows from the top. And same with fulfillment. It's that if your staff, right, or maybe if you're just a one-man band and you're running a clothing brand, if you yourself feel fulfilled and you're happy and you start with that, then as a result, the customers or the people that you serve or deliver products to will also feel fulfilled and happy, because they're receiving a service or a product from someone who also, you know, you just express that. And if the customers are fulfilled and they're happy, they're willing to pay for it and keep paying for it again and again and again and again, like from drop to drop. They'll be back every single time because the brand owner's happy. They create a good product for customers who are now happy, so they come back every time. And then so it flows down even one more level to the shareholders, people who are invested in the brand, whether financially or even just emotionally, right? What do they want at the end of the day? Shareholders' desires are pretty simple, and it's they want a return on investment, right? They want a return on investment. Well, they'll get that because all of the other things are in line and because the fulfillment and the value that's delivered flows from the top. And so them at the bottom of the trickle, they'll get exactly what they want because the customers are happy. And first and foremost, the staff or the service providers are happy. So yeah. Anyway, yeah. I just thought, yeah, I think it's relevant.
No, it definitely is relevant. It's very interesting. I think, like, the number one thing is providing value, right? And
yes,
I, it was difficult for me at the start because I never grew up with money. I guess I wasn't in a fortunate financial position. That's probably one of the reasons I started a business, right? Probably very similar to other people. You either work a job or you run a business, and you do both to earn money. And I guess I think it was Luke Belmard who said, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but money is sort of like a lagging indicator of what you do, right? If you're providing value and actually giving things and doing a good job, the money's going to come, but it comes after the work that you put in.
That's good.
And I think, I guess that's something I live by every day, right? If you want money, you got to have to, I guess, do things and not focus on the money, focus on providing a good product or service and actually fulfilling, I guess, what you do to the best of your ability.
You have to make the first move as the brand owner. Your 100%. Customers cannot make the first move.
100%. Yeah, that's very true. I think it probably ties into a little bit what your expertise are about building your community, right? You're not going to have a community unless you're providing good products, you're providing value. So, yeah, I guess that's probably something I struggled with to begin with, and something I would definitely want to dive into a little bit more about, I guess, being able to build a community. What would you say, I guess, firstly, a few things that people struggle with, and I guess maybe something even I could improve in terms of building a stronger and long-lasting community?
No, I'm glad you asked a question. It's a real hot topic, I think, in today's fashion landscape. But to really link it, it links strongly to this conversation, because building a community is about providing value. Providing value that's not selfish, but rather selfless. And so I think that the whole premise of a community is that we're here, we're all together, and we're unified around something that goes beyond ourselves. It's not just about me and what I want. You know, it's like a family. Like, you know, in my household for sure, it's not about like who did what. You know, who left the dishes out, who left the whatever. It's like, if you see it, you clean it, because we're a family, and that's how a family unit works. We don't keep records. It's about going for something bigger than ourselves. So go ahead.
Just add something on that. Sorry to cut you off.
Go.
I think that, I guess, ties into what I was mentioning before about how money's a lagging indicator, right? If you're the person who sees the problem of the dishes not being done and does it without having to be asked, I think that's really when you're going to
see
benefits in the later future, right? So I think that comes down to, I guess, a successful brand, right? If you're able to go beyond, I guess, to benefit others when it might not really affect you, you're going to benefit from it in the long term.
No, I'm really glad you added that, James. That's a really great point. Yeah, no, that's so true.
Cut you off there. Can continue.
No worries. So to your question, where are the places that most brands make mistakes when building community? Well, I'll start with where they get it right most of the time, right? For the most part, clothing brands are good at creating clothing products, right? So people get the GSM part. You know, if we make a t-shirt that, you know, 250 GSM, that's a really good quality t-shirt, and that's something that my customers are going to love. Absolutely correct. And then you have the design aspect. Some brands are better at this than others, but for the most part, you know, people get the part about creating a good design. You know, if you create a good design that people like, you're providing value through your product. So most people get that right. Most brand owners get that right. However, where it goes wrong is that most brand owners also stop there. They also stop providing value at the product. And the issue with stopping at the product is that it's really difficult for us humans to resonate with a product, right? Because at the end of the day, community is not just about value. It's about resonance, right? It's not just about you provided me, you know, like if it was just about value, we're just talking about business, any company ever. But not every company that makes a lot of money has a strong community.
Yeah.
So like because of that factor, we know community isn't just about value. And so that's why I like to say that a really good product is the bottom, the lowest standard, right? Every streetwear brand on earth should be providing really high quality products. Now, not all of them are, but the point is, like, if there's a brand that actually wants to build a community, that is the lowest standard. So then how do we actually take it to the next level and go beyond that? Well, as I was mentioning before, humans struggle to resonate with a piece of fabric because it doesn't have the qualities of, doesn't have the human and personality qualities. And so what we need to focus on then is the brand aspect, right? Because you can't create a community around a product. You can, however, around an idea. And so that's when, like, let's look to all the greatest examples of communities in society and in streetwear, right? We'll just like starting at the biggest, the most broad scale, biggest community we have in society is the Christian community, right? Whether you believe in it or not is besides the point. My point is that they've got something right because there's a lot of them, right? There's a lot of Christians out there,
yeah,
right? And they're not there because that, you know, someone was really good, like someone was a really good business person or someone sold a really good product. It's nothing about that. All these Christians are unified for a central belief in the same ideology around Jesus Christ, you know? And then so you, like, you know, let's take it to the world of fashion now. We have a brand like Supreme, right? Arguably they have a very strong community, right? And we know that's true as if maybe, I don't know if you're into Supreme, Jamar, but I'm sure there's someone in the audience that is like, ew, Supreme, yuck, how could you even mention their name, right? But that alone shows that they have a community, because if you have an out group, you definitely have an in group, right? If you hate it, there's definitely people that love it and that would call themselves the most loyal Supreme customers, right? What's their ideology? They're not selling clothing. Supreme's selling an idea. They're selling the New York City culture. They're selling the skating lifestyle. They're selling the idea of what it means to be an artist. So anyone who wears Supreme on their chest, they're representing those ideas to the world. And so becoming a community member of Supreme isn't so difficult anymore, because it's not about, I just like their product and I think they look nice and they're a good quality. Although all those things are true, I am loyal to Supreme because I buy into the brand before I buy into the product. And the brand is something I resonate with. And the ideas around it is what I resonate with. And that is why I am here with all these other people that call themselves members of the Supreme community, and why I'm proud to be a part of it. So just to summarize and to bring it all together, to answer the question, where do most brands go wrong? They stop at the product. They only sell the product. Right. And it's good. I'm sure you can make some money. You can get some sales, but you can't get customers and more. And even beyond that, you can't turn those customers into members if you don't sell the idea that has nothing to do with the product, that's behind the brand and that is represented by the product. Does that make any sense, Jamar?
Yeah, 100%. I think, I guess longevity was something I briefly spoke on before. And I think, I guess having repeat buyers and being able to increase.
Yeah.
The lifetime value of each customer is really where you'll find long-term success. I think that ties exactly into what you were mentioning. If brands are able, and I guess it's definitely something I need to take on and improve, is if you're able to, I guess, provide value and be fulfilling past the product, that's probably when you have a good chance of success.
Absolutely. That's where you have brands like, have you ever heard of Yes Theory, the YouTube channel?
No, I haven't. Sorry.
No. Okay. No. Okay. Well, I'll explain it briefly. Yes Theory is a group of guys that post videos around this idea of getting outside your comfort zone. So they do crazy challenges. They meet new friends. They take them on wild adventures. You know, they do something where they like have a 24-hour challenge. They have to find someone at the airport who's willing to spontaneously get on a plane with them, fly to an unknown country, and then, you know, create a video with them, and they pay for it all.
Yeah.
Like, but but that they're essentially trying to find people that resonate with their ideology around seeking discomfort, like getting outside your comfort zone or seeking discomfort, as they say. So they created this brand, right, in part to fund their mission and to fund their videos. And the brand is called Seek Discomfort. And like the amazing thing about it is now they have this worldwide international community of people that not only wear the brand, but it's a movement. Like these people organize events, like and forget about the brands that like do a pop-up, like the brand owners, like the founders, they organize the events. No, in Seek Discomfort, the members of the community organize these events. Like that's awesome. That's nuts. And yep. And like I mean, what's the effect of this? Well, like if you have so many little ties, like we can all be in the audience of the same thing like we are of the World Cup or the Olympics, you know, but you might be in Spain, you might be in Bali, right? And I'm here in Australia. We're the same audience, but it's only a community when there's little ties between the audience. It's within the audience that people, like customers, interact with customers. I mean, that's just cool. That's just really, really cool.
Yeah, 100%. It's, I guess, funny that you speak on having the community members create the events, right? That's that doesn't come overnight.
Absolutely not.
Happen when you've been doing it for a long time, really. So, yeah, they definitely must be doing something right.
Yeah, for sure. Have you like with format? Have you ever done any community events, or is it something that you'd consider doing into the future?
I've done I've attended like markets and things like that in Adelaide
when
I was first starting. I haven't done any pop-ups or anything like that, but it's 100% something that I want to do in the future. I think probably most of my buyers are from either Adelaide or Melbourne. So I guess
that makes it easier.
Probably doing an event in both cities would be definitely a goal of mine.
Yeah.
I think coming over to Melbourne and doing something is 100% something I want to do in the future. It's definitely something I've considered. It just hasn't really happened yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I suppose it's a bit like doing events like this it's pretty resource heavy. Even for mental space, mental capacity to pull off something like that, you're actually organizing people in the real world. It's no longer just me and my website. It's like, well, now we got people coming. Like they're coming, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's probably when we talk about like having a something that is extremely fulfilling, I think that's something that is on the bucket list to do.
Yeah.
I think that'd probably be one of the most fulfilling things that you could do, right? Having people actually show up that should support your brand. I don't think there's much else that could beat it, really. So I'm looking forward to the day that I can make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's exciting, man. You have to tell me about it. Invite me out, man.
Yeah, 100%. We'll do.
Yeah. Look, Jamar, I think I'd really like to make just a slight pivot, because you have this other aspect of what you do beyond your clothing brand is your JS marketing, right? Which I assume are your initials.
Yeah.
That's my best guess, right? And am I right in saying that it's a marketing agency that specializes in ads? Is that correct?
Yeah, that is exactly correct. And also correct on the initials in the name. but yeah, so
really my detective skills coming through there, right?
Yeah. No, you did a good job identifying that. I guess probably maybe 12 or 8 months into my brand, when I was going through those times of struggle really with the drops, I decided to dive a little bit deeper into ads, I was able to sort of find some success with it. We went from, I don't know, doing probably maybe 4 to 8K a month consistently. And then the first month we did ads, I think we hit like 38,000 that next 30-day period. So it really just like was the aspect of the marketing side of things that really made an impact in terms of sales. And we were just really, I was able to, I guess,
start
business consistently from there. And that's a really good thing about ads, is like I've never really had too much success in terms of organic content. And I know if you are able to succeed with content, there's probably nothing else better, right? You're not paying for views like you do with advertising. But advertising is very, I guess, scalable, and it's very, I guess, consistent and also quite reliable. So when I was able to, I guess, have some success and learn a little bit about what to do and what not to do, running ads for my own brand, I was at the time also continuing to work for my dad concreting. I had probably around 6 months worth of, I guess, savings that I was willing to sort of live off of if my marketing agency didn't work. And that's sort of when I made the second sort of decision of saying I'm going all in. And I guess I took the advertising skills that I learned from running my brand and started Jahez Marketing, as you mentioned before. I initially started running ads for trade businesses. So I guess concreting, landscaping, painting businesses, just generating leads for them through social media. That was really what I was doing. So I was able to, put their business in front of their ideal customer. And they were generating jobs from it. So I did that for probably 8 months, and then decided to make the change to running ads for clothing brands. That's really what I do now. So for the last probably 6 months, I've just been working with other businesses. So I run ads every day for my own brand. Currently, we don't have any products on the website at the moment, so I'm not running ads at the moment. I help other businesses manage their ads and help them scale, really.
That's awesome. Yeah, look, Jamar, I, having had conversations with a lot of brand owners, as I'm sure you have in the business that you're doing with your marketing agency, a reoccurring theme has always been, many people suggest that there is an increasing disappointment with the return on ad spend. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, these brand owners, like, of course they put some money in, say hard-earned cash, right? That they've and they're taking a risk with it. I mean, call it what it is. It's a risk to make any sort of business investment. And then they don't see the results, like it's a loss. And that's a real shame. So I'd really love if you led the second part of this conversation. And I mean, what would you say to those people with disappointing results with their ad spend? And what are the specific tips, the specific advice, the specific things that you're doing in your brand and with other brands that is really helping you to get these kind of crazy results? Please lead the way.
Yeah, 100%. I apologize, my camera turned off there. I was having
no worries, man. Didn't even notice a thing, Jamar.
But yeah, I guess advertising, especially with paid ads, is it can be scary, right? You can easily burn money. Like you mentioned, people, I guess, lose out on money, and that's really, I guess, where you need if you're going to do ads, you're probably best investing in an expert, right? That's what I did when I first started. I paid into a mentorship course. I guess you could call it a course, right? I paid around 6,000 AUD to learn how to run ads from another guy, a mentor. He was running an agency that was doing seven figures a year. So I was able to learn his exact marketing strategies directly from him and replicate them. So I guess if I was to recommend, I guess, what other people should do if they were to run ads, I would say you need to start extremely conservatively in terms of the budget, right? So it's very easy to burn money. The only way you should be increasing the amount that you're spending is when you're profitable. So no matter the size of the brand that I start working with, we always start with an extremely small budget because you don't want to burn money, right? And it's testing certain types of ads and different creatives and testing different audiences to find what works, and then only actually spending large amounts of money once you're actually profitable. So that probably helps the the issue of losing money with ads. Obviously, you're going to lose money if you don't know what you're doing, because ads are very difficult to run well.
Yeah.
But
so if you're, so say there's a brand out there who's doing, you know, just to throw out some numbers, 5,000 a month, mm-hmm. right, in revenue. When you say start very conservative, they've never run ads before. They've generated that organically, you know, after some doing the hard yards. If they were going to run ads conservatively according to this strategy, and they're doing 5,000 a month, what kind of numbers is conservative?
Yeah, so with advertising, it comes down to a daily budget. So you set how much money you want to spend per day. The more money you spend, the more people you're going to reach. And if your advertising's good, those people that you reach are going to, I guess, engage with the content and get sent to your website, which then leads to buyers. Yeah. So to be conservative, I would say you want to start with a budget of around $50 per day. If you start with a budget of $50, obviously depending on your product cost, but if you're running a clothing brand, your average order value might be 100 or 150, 200. So I would
say, right.
With $50 a day, if you're running an ad well, you'll definitely be able to get sales. But with $50 a day, you're going to be able to see and get enough data to be able to tell if the ad's working well or not.
Right.
So I guess advertising does cost a fair bit of money, and you do need to have money saved to actually invest into it. So I guess it might not be something that a smaller brand is ready to do just because of the cash flow. I say conservative, it's usually around $50 a day.
It's good to have those figures. You're right. There's going to be people, like, as you say, you need a bit of that principle to start up. I mean, if there's someone that's just working a day job and they are doing their brand as a side hustle, mm-hmm. man, I would be putting aside a percentage of that day job income every single time it comes in, every single week or every single month, whatever the frequency is, a percentage of that, and just spend it where it's needed in the business. And I think a lot of people get wrapped up with saving, because saving's an investment. But the truth is, money sitting in the bank account is losing money, because your interest rate, if the interest rate is lower than the inflation rate, which it basically always is, especially right now, then it's just losing value. And so, like, a better investment than saving it would be like investing in yourself, investing in a business. If you were able to put in, you know, $100 or $50 a week, even just away, and you let that go for a bit of time, well, in a few months, you have 30 days worth of ads, $1,500 monthly ad budget. And if it goes well, you'll make all that money back plus some.
Yeah.
Plus some.
100%. I definitely agree about, I guess, storing money in your bank account, especially with how the financial side of the world and, I guess, Australia is going at the moment. They're just printing more and more money every day. So the actual value of your money is going down, and you need to be, I guess, in my opinion, you need to be investing money into a business or something that's actually going to be generating you an income every single day of the year. I 100% agree with you on that. But yeah, the good thing about running ads is you can spend $50 and make back $200, right? So for the second day, if you do that day one, second day, you're not even taking money out of your bank account. You're taking money that you've just made from the second day. So
it's a reinvestment.
If you're good at advertising, or you have someone that is good at advertising, you might not even need a full month's worth of advertising spend. You might only need the first week. And if you're able to be profitable, you're really just reinvesting the money that you're making and then just taking the profits top. So it's probably, in my opinion, the best way to scale a brand, but it's also the best way to turn a brand to zero money, right? You can easily burn money with ads, like I mentioned. And I guess that's probably why I love running my marketing agency, because similar to the clothing brand, it's extremely fulfilling. If I'm able to run ads well for another business and do it profitably, it's not only going to increase their financial position, but actually increase the size of their business and if they're running a good brand, that means they're having happy customers, and I guess building a loyal community. So it's definitely a good sort of business to be in. I really like it.
That's great. I'm so glad to hear that you're really liking what you're doing. I'm curious, like, what do you actually do? Are you managing the ads? Are you dealing with the targeting? Are you coaching on how to make the ads themselves? Like, what parts are you involved in and what parts aren't you?
Yeah, so with my offer at the moment, it's essentially a done-for-you system, right? So right. I mentioned very briefly at the start, I've got employees that help me on my marketing side of things. So I've got various employees within the marketing business that help me run the service. So if a brand was to partner up with myself and my team, all they need to do is provide me with content. We usually ask for around 10 to 15 new pieces of content every single week. And basically, it's a done-for-you system, right? So we'll handle the entire advertising side of things. So we, I guess, figure out what the ideal audience is for the specific brand, push the ads towards that exact customer, and get sales on their website as a result. So we handle everything, and it really not only is a way for the business owner to save time, but actually increase the size of their business and increase the amount of money that they're making.
Yeah. So I've got two questions on that then. And you attack these in whichever order you prefer, and ask me if you forget them. That's okay too. So the first one is, I'm sure having seen lots of different types of content that's come through, and you've tried lots of different using those pieces of content for different ads for many different brands. What makes a good ad? Like, what kind of content actually goes into a good ad? What are the do's and don'ts? What works every time? What doesn't? Is there anything like that? And the second question is, when you're talking about targeting, I'm sure it's a bit different for every brand, but what's your approach to ad targeting?
Mm-hmm.
Over to you.
Yeah. So what goes into making a good ad, the number one most important thing is the product, right? It doesn't matter how sophisticated you make the video or picture, how edited it is or anything like that. If you've got a bad product, people are just going to swipe past, right? There's no chance of having a good ad unless you've got a good product. And I think that's really the make or break of any brand, right? You'll have success with ads if you have a good product. And if you have a good product, you'll crush with ads. That's the good thing about it. So it definitely is, the product is very important, but it also, I guess, comes down to having very high quality content. A clothing brand is an extremely competitive industry, and there's a lot of people running ads at the moment. A lot of people are aware of the opportunity that is out there if you have a successful advertising campaign. So it's very important that you, number one, have a good product, you have extremely good, high quality content, and funny enough, providing value, right? If you're offering some sort of free gift or discount, or I guess something that is going to entice someone to not only click on the advertisement, but actually purchase on the back end of the website, that's really what's going to create an effective ad. So it's kind of a hard thing, right? Because sometimes a brand will sign me to run their ads and we have a bad month, they lose money. And it's kind of out of my control because, like I said before, it comes down to the product.
Yeah.
They're unable to provide good content and they additionally have a bad product. There's not really too much I can do to actually have success with the ads. So it definitely comes down to, like I said, product, the quality content, and actually being able to leverage and provide value.
Yeah, provide value. No, that's a really great response. Makes it super clear. Two follow-up questions on that. What is, like, how come a good quality product affects the ad? Like, it makes sense. However, it's not like a store where you feel the material, you know, you try it on, it fits to size, you like it how it looks on you. Like, you know, people can't feel, like, it's social media. It's an ad on their screen. People can't feel the material. They can only see the design. So is it just about the design? Like, what do you mean by a good quality product and why does it affect it?
It's pretty much just the design and how it looks. Yeah. Right? If you makes see sense. An ad and you like it, you like the look of, for yeah. example, if you're selling a t-shirt, you scroll and you like the t-shirt, you're going to either spend a few seconds looking or you're going to click on it.
Yeah.
Versus if you scroll past and you don't like the look of the product, and I would consider that a bad product, you're just going to continue swiping, right? So very, very different to being able to feel the product in real life. It's really just about having an eye-catching product that is different to other brands, and something that I would say a winning product, right? I'm not sure if that term has been thrown around with you before, but I would say a winning product is really the make or break of a brand. You can have a good community, but no one's going to buy if your product's not good. So I would say the number one important thing is having a product that looks nice and is actually appealing.
Absolutely,
something that someone could see themselves wearing.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. The other question I had, because you mentioned before, it's really important to create high quality content. Define high quality. I mean, you just talk about high resolution, like please define that.
Yeah, so definitely high resolution. I guess it slightly ties into value as well. You can be a little bit cheeky in providing value in terms of the content as well. And that, I guess, is what I would consider high quality content. But it's mainly just the resolution, right? There's a lot of people that post videos, they're not using that good of that good of resolution. So if you've got a picture or video that is, it kind of stands out. So I would say, I guess, something that's eye-catching. So that can be to do with the quality of the content and also the product. But something that's very clear, straight to the point. You really need to show off and display what you're actually trying to do and the objective of the ad within the first sort of 3 seconds, because otherwise someone's just going to continue going. If they're not aware that you're selling a product, then they're not going to click on to buy, right? So it additionally ties into the second part of the question with the audience and who you're targeting, because that can make or break an ad as well. I guess I can go in a little deeper if you'd like about the audience and that side of things.
Please go. No, go. Yeah. So that was actually the second question was about the targeting. So please go ahead. Talk about that.
Yeah. So it really just comes down to what we're advertising for, the brand that we're advertising, and additionally the product. Sometimes we'll find that just being extremely broad and letting Facebook do its thing is what works best. I guess for those who don't know, Facebook and Instagram are run by the same company, Meta. So when I say Facebook, it's really Facebook and Instagram advertising. Sometimes I guess I can just run a campaign on broad. There's no targeting at all. And Facebook's AI will be able to detect what, I guess, this brand is about, who their ideal customer is, and then share the ad directly to that person. But other times not. So if you were to be specific, and I guess you really need to test this and see what works and what doesn't. Sometimes I'll be extremely specific in terms of where I target the ads. So if it's a higher price product, you can be extremely specific in where the ad is seen, right, in terms of location. So I'll use various websites and softwares to determine certain parts of Australia and certain suburbs within each city that tend to have a higher income and therefore have a higher budget when they come to spending online, and specifically target the ads exactly to those types of neighborhoods. That's something.
What are those websites and softwares?
So I guess you can use AusPost. That allows you can really identify, I guess, where a lot of products are being sent. And additionally, you can see the incomes of other people.
That's cool. I think
there's also a couple of government websites that show you, I guess, what type of percentages in terms of earning each suburb is earning and things like that. So really, AusPost website, I guess, there's a couple of the government websites as well.
That's neat. Yeah, I didn't know you could, like, that kind of stuff was accessible. So that's cool. That's a good idea.
Yeah, so that really, I guess I was able to do that and usually use that to my advantage when I was advertising for trade businesses as well. If you target a high income area, they're usually the person who's going to be making renovations to their home and things like that. Additionally, spending more money on higher price products. So that's something that goes into it. then just the basic things, right? Targeting certain genders, certain age brackets. But probably the best thing as well is, I'm not sure if you've ever experienced, but for example, most people always have their phone near them. And I guess it happened to me the other day, right? I was speaking to my friend about a shark attack, and the next minute I grab my phone, and the first thing I see is a video on a shark attack, right? So your phone's always listening to you and things like that. So
you think legit? You reckon it's listening?
Oh, I don't know what it is really, but it happens to me quite often, right? I'll be talking about a certain topic, and then 5 minutes later I'll pick up my phone and it appears like an ad about it or a video to do with it.
Either it's confirmation bias, or you're 100% right. It is literally listening in.
I'm not exactly sure, and I probably shouldn't dive into exactly that type of thing. But yeah, it's very interesting. So you can be specific in terms of the interests that you target, right? So if someone's previously searched up baggy jeans on Google, they're the type of person who's gonna, see a baggy jean ad on their social media. Be specific in terms of the location, the age bracket, the gender, and also the interests when targeting and advertising on Facebook.
That's good advice. Really clear. Yeah. Thanks for laying that out so clearly. And I think that the interest part is especially relevant to niche specific brands with a specific lifestyle behind them. Like, for example, if I were Patagonia, I'd be targeting people who are interested in the environment and sustainability and environmental activism and, you know, all those kind of things, because they might be more interested than someone who's maybe doesn't really care about that stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, change the niche to whatever, insert your niche, right? But yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It really just depends on what the brand is about and what type of product they're selling. So you really just use that to your advantage when actually targeting. Advertising is quite hard. It took me a few at least a year to get good at it. I guess I would consider myself quite decent at advertising. I've generated hundreds of thousands of dollars directly from Facebook and Instagram ads. So it is definitely difficult, but when you, I guess, are able to be good at it, you can generate a lot of money. Or if you were to invest in an agency or have someone else run your ads for your brand, not only going to save you time, but it could be the one thing that gets you to the next milestone in terms of the amount of orders you're getting per month.
Yeah. It's something like, I think it's not something to do instead of organic content for those that are already creating it, rather on top of, I think another piece of advice I've heard, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, Jamar, is that you can test organic content, and what performs well of that, you can repurpose as ads.
And
because ads is not going to make a bad piece of content work, but it will make a good piece of content work even better.
100%. That's, if I was to work with a new brand, that's exactly what we do. We look at content that's done well, and sometimes we'll just copy and paste that content into an ad. It's very similar to what I said before about if you have a bad product, you're not going to have success with ads. So quite often, if you're struggling with organic, it may be your content is the issue. And if you run that content as an ad, it's probably not going to do well. I think it ties back into what you mentioned before about it's quite common that people will lose money on advertising because they think that their content is good. And I guess, as you would, right, everyone's biased with their own brand, me included. So sometimes... it's really about actually having an outside perspective and figuring out, is it your product that's bad? Is it your content that's bad? Or is it, I guess, a bunch of other things that are hurting your business, right? It's not just the reach that you're getting or the advertisements that you're running. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of different factors that go into it. And that's, I guess, why a clothing brand or e-commerce is so difficult.
Yeah. Speaking of ads, Jamar, I would love you to, before you tell us exactly where people can find who you are and what you do if they want in their own time, I want you to drop the biggest gem after this ad, the biggest gem, the biggest golden nugget of the entire podcast. So Jamar, where can people find who you are and what you do if they want to find out more?
Yeah, so probably the easiest way to contact me is just on Instagram. It's just my first and last name, jmar.scarvelis on Instagram. Or you can, I guess, find me through my clothing brand, Format Attire, on Instagram. But I guess if you're someone who runs a clothing brand or is interested in business, who you may be if you've watched this podcast up until now, I would be, I guess, blessed to have a conversation with you. I guess if you're just interested in how you can improve your brand, or you may potentially be interested in actually running some ads and scaling, then yeah, definitely send me a message on Instagram, just to my personal account or anything like that. And I'll be more than happy to potentially work alongside you, or additionally just have a chat and get to know you. Because like I mentioned before, I'm definitely interested in building my network and getting to know some other people in the industry. That's definitely a priority for me. So I would appreciate it a lot if you've watched this podcast up until now. If you can get in touch, that would that'd mean a lot to me.
Jmar, thank you for sharing that. Thanks for sharing where people can find you. Now, here's no pressure. The biggest golden nugget you have. We've been waiting for this point. We've been building up in the last 60 minutes to this moment right now. What have you got to say for the people? Any listeners who might have a clothing brand, what's the best thing you got for them?
The best thing I would have has to be your mindset, right? Mindset is number one, in my opinion, the most important thing with any type of business. If you have a bad mindset, you're never going to do well. I guess that's from my perspective. And I would say, probably as silly as it might sound, physical activity, right? I think the moment I started working out every day and going to the gym was the moment my business started to become successful. I think mindset really ties into your ability to push yourself physically. If you're able to be the type of person that goes to the gym every day, or just works out, or goes for a run every single day without missing a day, you're also going to be the type of person who works on their business every day. So I would say if you're looking to, I guess, improve, I would say push yourself physically, whether that's lifting weights or running or doing any type of physical activity. I would really say that is going to be something that ties back into your business. So I guess if there's any type of gem, I would say do your best to push yourself physically, and that's going to improve your mindset. And no matter what, that'll 100% lead to, I guess, improving your business.
Great things are built upon simple disciplines.
100%. I agree with that.
It's a really great gem you shared with us, Jmar. Look, I really appreciate you coming on the show, for being so open to share everything you have and everything you got without holding back. Thanks once again. I hope this isn't the last time, Jmar.
Yeah, no, it was very good to meet you today. It's the first podcast I've ever done, and I enjoyed every moment of it. I guess, like I said to you on Instagram DMs, I was waiting for the day where I was asked to go on a podcast. And I guess now's the day that I get to do it. So it's been something I want to do and tick off on the bucket list. So I'm very glad that we were able to, I guess, come together and film this today.
Hey, first of many, this is a monumental moment, Jmar. It's like I'm a part of the first of many. I'm so like, hey, this is one for the records, for the record books, hey?
Yeah, 100%. I like you said, I hope it's not the last time that we chat.
No, definitely not. Yeah, network's so important to me, as it is to you. And so I think, like, you know, one of my favorite parts of doing a podcast like this is that I get to make friends with the people that come and share value to my listeners. And so it's so generous for you to come on here, spend some time with me. And also we get to stay friends. It's so good. So I love it. Thanks so much for coming on again. Jmar's links will be in the description from wherever you're consuming this podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Elijah Delport. This is Street Cred, and I'll see you next time. Hey, this is the post-production Elijah here. Thanks once again for listening to this conversation I had with Jmar. I hope it was valuable. And I mean, you're at the end, so I suppose you have found it valuable. Otherwise, what a waste of time, am I right? But look, if you found this valuable, you can trust that I put out a lot more valuable stuff out to the world than just this. So I want to tell you and personally invite you to a community of 50 plus other motivated brand owners who you can network with, who you can ask questions to, who are giving advice. And really, this is such a welcoming space for people who are starting and growing their own clothing brand. It's 100% free to join. All I want you to do is go to the description of wherever you're consuming this podcast. Click on that link and it's going to take you to my community page. Press on join community and then fill out the application. It only takes 2 minutes just to answer a few questions about why you want to join. And then I'll approve and see you on the inside. It's very simple. And then you can start networking with other brand owners. And look, here's a special gift even. There is a free streetwear marketing course all about how to turn your audience into a community. It's about increasing your customer loyalty behind your brand. So look, there's no reason not to join. You've got every reason to join. So just check it out. You've got nothing to lose. It's absolutely free. And, you know, even Jaymar's in the community now, and he's dropping some absolute facts about how to do your ads and stuff. So, look, anyway, thanks for listening to this episode. I'll be sure to see you for the next one. And, hey, if you want to feature on a future episode, send me an email. Let me know that, say, hey, Elijah, I would love to be on an episode. Let me know what your episode would be about, something unique, and who knows, you might just be on the next episode of Street Cred. Just shoot me an email at lige@elijahdelport.com. That's lij@elijahdelport.com. And you know, just my name is how it's spelt in the title of this podcast. So look, thanks very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow for another podcast.